You're listening to the Mind Your Own Business podcast, aimed at helping photographers learn how to make the leap from amateur to pro. Hello, and welcome to the Mind Your Own Business podcast, a joint effort brought to you by Photo Focus, Skip Cohen University, and Adobe Stock. This is Shamir Young, and I'm joined by the Empire Building, Skip Cohen. Skip, how are you?
Oh, there's always an adjective in there. I mean, all right, so today I am Empire Building. All right.
Building an empire.
I like it. It works.
Yes.
So how are you?
I'm fantastic, even though there's snow on the ground right now here in Michigan. I'm wonderful.
All right. I did have to put the top up today. It was a little cool in Florida, but
cool being all of 75 degrees. Oh my goodness.
A bone chilling 75.
You're killing me.
Hey, Shamira, I was thinking the other day about how much the internet has totally changed the way we share images.
And I would agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's so different. And then if you go beyond the way we as consumers share images or as business owners with clients, it's especially changed in the way the business world communicates now that they can add not only still images but video through Adobe Stock.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds like maybe it's even a disconnect, but the demand is so huge. And I don't know. I guess I'm still amazed. You and I know a lot of photographers, and I'm so amazed at how many still don't realize the value of their skill set and their images, especially video skills in the outside world now, beyond what they do for their clients.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of crazy because it's like they're sitting on these assets that can bring in more income.
Yeah, and depending on their skill sets and the topics that they're covering, there's such a huge and growing demand from the business world looking for short video clips that tie back in with their product or lifestyle that they're trying to promote or something that they're doing. And photographers have always recognized, or not always, but for a lot of years have recognized the value of still images. But now video, and this is all thanks to social media, the internet, whether it's somebody's website or Facebook. I mean, everybody has the ability today to provide images and video to the business community, or at least everybody with a skill set in photography.
Absolutely. And the nice thing about it is that it's not like it's a ton of extra work, especially when you're out shooting anyway. Just switch your camera over to video and you can put that video to use later, upload it to Adobe Stock and have that bring in income. It's a perfect fit. And I think a lot of us don't quite realize that or have that in our minds when we're out shooting still images for a client, just how easy it can be to take some quick video. And it can be, like you mentioned, for example, lifestyle. It can be everyday stuff. It doesn't have to necessarily be business people shaking hands. It can just be, you know, a cityscape or just your natural surroundings.
Hey, let's get going here. This is a good one today.
Yeah, I am so excited. So excited for our guest. Did you want to do the honors?
I would love to do the honors. We've got Lynn Goldsmith here with us today. And honestly, if I shared her entire bio, there'd be no time for us to talk. She's had and continues to have an amazing career. And in all honesty, if you haven't seen her images somewhere in your lifetime, it means you've been in solitary confinement for a lot of years. Collections of her work are all over the world. They include the Smithsonian, the National Portrait Gallery, the Museum of Modern Art, the Chicago Museum of Contemporary Photography, one of my favorites, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and that's only the beginning of the list. And then when you start thinking about where her work has appeared in terms of magazines and newspapers, it's Life, Newsweek, Time, Vanity Fair, Rolling Stone, National Geographic, Travelers, Sports Illustrated, People, Elle, Interview, The New Yorker. And again, that's only the beginning. Her subjects have included entertainment personalities to sports stars, film directors to authors, the extraordinary to the ordinary man on the street. And there are 13 books of Lynn's imagery published as of today, one of which, New Kids, was on the New York Times bestseller list. And for those of us that have had books in photography, that almost never happens for photography books. But here's the fun of to me, of having met and worked with Lynn just a little bit, all the accolades don't begin to describe what a kick it is to work with her. I first met her when one of her images was the cover of the inaugural issue of After Capture magazine many years ago. And that year, she was also part of a panel discussion at WPPI. And a year later, the late Bill Herter and I wandered over to a gallery opening she had in Santa Monica that was absolutely jam-packed. So I want to just close my little intro here. There's a belief that Lynn holds constant. And I want to actually read the quote from her website because it really explains why she is the powerhouse that she is. Quote, creativity is based on breaking limiting thought patterns, busting through fear, taking risks, and persistently working hard toward your goals if you want to maximize your potential for a full life. Close quote. And that really describes our guest today. And Lynn, it is a kick to have you with us. Welcome to Mind Your Own Business.
Well, thank you. I thought actually it was Keep Your Mind on Your Own Business, but the name of your podcast. But because I used to have a mantra, which was Keep Your Mind on Your Own Business, just the letters, because I thought that was a really important way to focus on how you can improve, not concerning yourself with whatever issues other people have, you know, that really that's not your problem. So anyway, so shall we move on to photography and what you might want to ask?
Oh my goodness. Yes, Lynn. So looking at your portfolio, I mean, even just your celebrity portfolio, I'm seeing Judge Judy and John Goodman, and just the list goes on and on and on. Eddie Murphy. So when I look at this and all of your accomplishments, and Skip did such a great job with that intro, I think sometimes it's easy for people to forget that you got started just like the rest of us, where you had to build up your business. So we're just super curious. Could you share a bit about how you did get your start in photography?
I think no matter what career path you choose, you know, it's always a process of building it up. In my particular journey, I really didn't consider the label of photographer as a career path. I think many of the really fantastic individuals that I'm sure you've had on your show, whether it be Greg Gorman or other people, their focus was always on being a photographer. That was their main form of expressing themselves and wanted to make a career as such. That's not really how it worked for me. I'm someone who thinks of myself as an idea person. And the camera has always been a tool for me to make something that then I could show to other people in order to get my idea manifested. Some people, you know, when they can draw it, or some people can write it out. I always had a skill with making images because I'd been doing that since I was like 5 years old with a camera. My dad was a serious amateur, and obviously that affected my desire to want to make pictures because I could go in the darkroom with him. And for a kid, I mean, even for an adult, to see an image come up in some plastic tray is utterly magical. So, you know, I was hooked on photography just as a form of expression, not as a career option. For me, I made pictures in the beginning professionally because I was directing the first rock and roll show on TV called ABC in Concert, and I would have to have storyboards. So I would go out, see a show, and take pictures and then sort of storyboard it. I also used to write stories prior to ever being a director, and I wanted to work with the National Lampoon, so I would write these what then became known as photo funnies, and you know, have actors, and that was really the purpose of making the pictures. I realized when I was managing Grand Funk that the more pictures I could take of them and get out to publications, that they became more popular. So, you know, pictures served a certain purpose for me, but it wasn't to, you know, put food on the table. It was more for me to concentrate on other avenues. As life went on, and being female, oftentimes in my day, it was just hard to work with groups of people, particularly in network television, where cameramen were 20 years older than me or 30 years older than me, and they really didn't like taking direction from a kind of spitfire like myself, who's rather impatient on top of it. So I just one day said, when I realized that I could earn a living making pictures, that was far, it gave me a lot more freedom, and I didn't have to have so many people working with me to achieve my final goal. So it fit my personality and my way of working. And the camera has always been a means of finding out more about myself, about nature, about other people. It enlarged my world. So with a camera, unlike with a crew to make documentaries or such, you know, it was far easier to do that. And I would just take my pictures around to publications, and, you know, people liked them, they bought them. And, you know, it wasn't like some big plan that I had in life, you know. I think there's a big difference since Annie Leibovitz and I are pretty much the same period of time. If you look at Annie's career, she clearly associated herself with a publication, first Rolling Stone, then Vanity Fair. And they did all the work of bringing her subjects. And she was clear that was all she wanted to do, was be the best photographer she could be. And that's not who I am. Not that I don't want to be the best that I can be, but I was someone who also wanted to write songs with people. I made a record for Island Records. I've done a number of things. So my focus was never specifically just about making images. It was more, I made images to make the money to give me the freedom. I made images to learn and explore the world. It was my passport. And I made images because of the feeling of making them. It was so easy to attain a sense of being in the moment and the excitement, and to do this without the lengthy time frame of making a film or, you know, editing a television show. So, you know, there wasn't any clear path. I didn't study photography. I didn't study business. I think, if anything, out of my studying psychology was the important aspect when it comes to celebrity portraiture. But I don't think that people necessarily know what their exact bliss is. You do something, hopefully, because you're passionate about it, and it might lead you to something else. You know, now I think we're incredibly fortunate in this age of the digital world that even if you are a photographer, the ability to make an image, which that used to be a marking of a moment in time. And that's not necessarily, in fact, it's rarely what photography is anymore. Photography has become, I think, since Adobe's introduced Photoshop, far more of a medium of idea expression. And, you know, so for those people who might not be so talented in the skill of drawing or painting, Photoshop allows them with any skill in creating images as a photographer to then take it to whole new levels. And I just think that the field, as it keeps expanding, offers great opportunities for those people who are looking to express themselves as artists.
You know, it's interesting that you don't look at yourself as a photographer, and hearing you explain and actually going through your bio, which I hadn't read in a long time, you have a how do I describe this? You are the ultimate storyteller. It's not just about photography is part of that. And when I think about even a wedding photographer that's just starting out isn't creating a book of pictures. They're creating a story. They're telling that, and that's the story of the start of a brand new family. And that album is hopefully going to be the first family heirloom of a new family. In your case, because you like to write, because you're an author, because you're a filmmaker, because you like having a camera in your hands, because you can communicate, because you mentioned before, I didn't know this, you mentioned before that you wanted to write songs and cut a record, because you have managed, you mentioned managing Grand Funk. You put all those together. And to me, what I see is, like I said, is the ultimate storyteller who just happens to have or developed over the years all the right skills for each component that went into telling those stories.
Well, I do appreciate that, and I do think I'm a storyteller. So I'm happy to be called that. I like that. But I do want to share with you that currently I am working on a book for Tashin with Patti Smith. And when I presented like the first layouts to Patty to look at, they were very much organized in a story-like way, right? And the way that I've never, when I do my books, even if it's on a single subject matter like Patty, whether it was New Kids or Kiss, I do them. And then the artist sees them just because I want them to see them and tell me if there's anything they don't want in there or something they don't like. But with Patty, I wanted to do this with her. So when I laid it out like that and I said, okay, but I need your writing. I write here, you write there. And she was like, no. She said, Lynn, this is an art book. And she said, and this was so good for me. She was surprised at how excited I was by her going, no, this is an art book, and you don't have to be locked into, like, telling a story. You lay the pictures out. You do what you want to do, and then we write. And it was like, that's what I call, for me, a pattern interrupt. And I think that those things are good for everyone. You have your process of doing it, and you need to open up and try new things or new approaches if you are really going to keep on learning from whatever your craft is. And so it's made this project so exciting for me, because it's a whole new way of thinking about it.
I have a quick technical question I want to sneak in here. Your career covers film, like so many. It was only film in the beginning, and now into digital. I'm just curious. Your photographic archives have to be monstrous, and I'm just curious how everything is stored.
Oh well,
you've got. I mean, it has to be hundreds of thousands of.
No, you're talking millions.
Okay, let's try it again. It has to be millions. That's what goodness. I said. It has to millions of frames.
Yeah. Well, first of all, what we didn't talk about in the course of my career was, you know, taking on the responsibility for licensing the images. There were friends of mine, that's how my photo agency started, who also wanted their pictures in magazines. And I was always, I like to think of myself as a person who likes to share. So I said, well, I'll take yours too. And a photo agency was born in almost in the same way that my photo career was born. I didn't mean to do it. And in the process of all of the 20 years that I or so that I had that photo agency, it kind of weighed on me the what I knew was coming in the future with digital. And I really didn't. I want to be an artist. I don't want to just be in the world of licensing images. So there were agencies like Sigma and Gamma, which don't even exist anymore. And I asked them if they wanted to buy me, and they didn't. So I wrote a letter to Bill Gates, as I've written letters to other people, that ended up, you know, I think, why not? I don't think, like, how are you going to get to Bill Gates? I found out where the offices of Microsoft were. He was taking a lot of crap for starting Corbis by buying the Bettman archive and putting it you know, under lock and key. So I wrote a letter about what his photo agency could be, blah, 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 blah. But I had to let them have a portion of my work besides passing on, you know, the 25 employees I had and all the photographers we had by that period of time. So I have a body of work that is stored in Iron Mountain, and then I have another body of work that's mine. So what do I do with it? There's way too much to scan. We'd be scanning forever. It feels that way anyway. And besides, sometimes things happen where whether it's the scanning is improved or whoever scanned it didn't make a good scan, so you want to have access to your film, you know, to the original. And I have that even if it's in Iron Mountain. So I have this huge film archive that has to move with me where I move. And many a day I have wished that I had just been a writer, and that all I would have would be some papers that have to be digitized, but I'd be traveling with a pen or a pencil or a computer, you know. Yeah, it's part of the joy of me knowing that the newer generations, the generations of the last 10 or so years, where those people coming out of photography schools, many of them, you know, they've never even seen a piece of film. You know, they're all digital, so they're not weighed down by what that career means in terms of storage. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Oh, I can only imagine. And, you know, Lynn, you mentioned image licensing. That kind of brings to mind for me, kind of related, but the subject of copyright, which in talking to photographers, and for me for a long while, it was kind of this hazy, nebulous thing. But I think understanding it can be very powerful. And I was wondering if you would touch on the importance, kind of the role of copyright pertaining to photographers and their businesses.
Well, I've always thought that whatever it is you choose to do, you're responsible. And it is actually very upsetting to me that any visual artist, much less a photographer, would not familiarize themselves and take responsibility for the work that they've created. I mean, obviously, all the big companies have always done it, from Warner Brothers Films to Walt Disney. You know, so if you're an image maker, if you're a creator, I believe you have a responsibility to that which you've created. There are, it's certainly not, you know, it's not fun, it's not glamorous, as oftentimes shooting can be, or when you hear the word photographer, but, you know, it's part of the package. Everything has its pluses and minuses, and I think it's important to understand and to accept that responsibility. Out of all of the art forms, which I'm including authors, not just visual artists, but whether, you know, all of the unions that exist for the different kinds of art forms, it's the photographic community, particularly the visual community, who have not stood together under what has become the interpretations of fair use. When a number of years ago, maybe 15 years ago, all of the record labels got together to define that in the courts. And there are guidelines for how much of a song can be taken before a payment has to be made. You know, I hear from so many photographers when I say, oh, you know, I saw your image is being used by this store for advertising. Did you license it? And they say no. And I say, well, are you going to go after them? And they say, I don't really want to get involved and call a lawyer. Well, what they don't understand is that's the reason why more and more photographers are losing their rights. You know, they don't stand together. And all the photography, the various associations, it's not like they easily join up together the way all the other kinds of unions do. I know this because I'm involved in a lawsuit with the Andy Warhol Foundation, and I have tried, ASMP is behind me, and they've issued statements about it, and they'll all get behind me when it gets to the stage of the amicus brief. And hopefully it will go that far, but it's a very costly and time-consuming battle that I'm involved in now, which is not about making money for myself. It's about I'm sick and tired of everyone just thinking that they can take photographs make slight changes to them, and then call them their own and benefit from them. And I think many, many, many photographers are outraged about it, but it's like, when are they going to do something? So I have a GoFundMe Warhol V.S. Goldsmith. And so far it's raised almost $13,000. And so far, out of my own pocket, I'm more than $150,000 into this, and it's going to keep going. So, you know, I wanted that GoFundMe not just to raise money to fight them all the way to the Supreme Court, which will cost over $1 million, but I wanted to send a message to the Warhol Foundation, to Richard Prince, to the wealthy artists who think that they can intimidate photographers who don't want to or can't afford to spend the money to fight for their rights. But what's really important is I wanted to send the message that there are hundreds and thousands of us, you know, even if they did $5 each, who are standing up together to voice themselves. Now, granted, there are many, many issues in the world that we all need to stand up and fight for. And, you know, I have a certain amount of guilt when I think about asking for any kind of attention or contribution to this particular cause. But it's really important. And, you know, I've made it clear that any money awarded, hopefully I'm going to win, because if I lose, everybody loses. And any monies awarded to me will be given to copyright organizations that help to protect artists' copyright, particularly for those artists who can't afford, you know, the kind of legal help that will win these battles. Our definition of transformative under the fair use aspect has become so broad that I can't take it anymore. So and like when you talk to other photographers, they all voice this, but it's like, okay, then let's stand up and fight this together. And I've been trying to motivate that, but the photographer mindset, you know, just like when I talked earlier about when I didn't need crews anymore to make films or to do the TV show or to have actors and to put things together for the lamp, whatever it was that I did, teams of people with Grand Funk, it was like, oh, it can just be me and my camera. This is a relief. You know, it's kind of a group of people that are used to really working on their own. So it's much harder to gather them together than it is, I think, in some other areas of the arts.
Len, I know there's only so much you can share publicly, but can you just in two or three sentences just explain to our listening audience what the issue is over?
Sure, but I'd also have explained it really clearly at the GoFundMe Warhol V.S. Goldsmith.
Well, we're going to have a link for that with the podcast, so that people can click on that and go there,
oh,
too.
Oh, great. Sure. No, I have a photograph that I made in the studio on an assignment for Newsweek in 1981 of the recording artist Prince. It's a studio headshot portrait. Andy Warhol, without my knowledge and without my consent, utilized that photograph for one of his celebrity paintings and silkscreen prints. When I discovered it, which was not until Prince died, I contacted the Warhol Foundation to find out more about it, how many were there. And from that phone call, they decided to sue me. It's the first time in history. They're suing me for my own copywritten photograph. Well, no, that's because I'm sure they felt that they would frighten me because they have very deep pockets and that then I would just go away. Warhol and the Warhol Foundation had already been sued 14 different times and settled them. So they, this is, you know, this is what I felt they were thinking that I would, that they could then turn around, which they tried to do, and make me some offer to go away that was ridiculous. And so I not only have to answer their suit, but of course I am countersuing. So it's games that people play, and they play them more and more now. Because, you know, lawyers get paid a lot of money, and the Warhol Foundation can certainly afford to keep on appealing. And they will keep on appealing, and so will I, because hopefully I will be able to have the Supreme Court hear this. Since my photograph is copywritten by me, so hopefully the case will be heard before the Supreme Court, and there will be a ruling which clearly defines the fair use aspect. This whole question of fair use has been brought up and brought to the attention of the photo community, whether it's through somebody recently had a case where a picture was gotten off of Twitter and then it's used for television. You know, it's like if you want this to be able to be a field in which you can earn a living and that you have self-respect for the work, for yourself and for the work that you create, then you better familiarize yourself with the copyright law. You know, there's this thing in the world, and always has been, you know, as soon as I think pictures started popping out of Polaroids, that this was easy to do, and then what cell phones can do, and then what digital cameras can do. But, you know, there's a very different education of what's needed in making professional images, as well as investment in equipment and programs and computers and backup systems. And, you know, it goes on and on. So I really feel we're at a point here, at least I am, where I felt I had to stand up and fight this, even though at my age, believe me, spending my time, much less my money, on this battle is not what I want to be doing. But I feel like it's really too important, and probably more important than anything else that I've done in my life. You know, hopefully if I do have a legacy, some people will think, oh, her legacy is rock and roll pictures, or, oh, her legacy was, I'd rather have them think my Will Powers, because that helps some people. But no, the real deal for me will be to hopefully strengthen or just make clear what I believe Congress meant when they created a copyright law, and what that means for us as artists.
Wow. I had a a conversation with Jack Resnicki not too long ago, and Jack is one of the co-authors of the book on copyright and for photographers to help them. And that's been one of Jack's leading charges. And one of the things that he mentioned was that he's able to be, I don't want to say retired because I don't think Jack is ever going to retire, but he's able to pick and choose the kinds of projects and things he wants to do today because he did protect all of his images and he did make sure that he retained the rights so that those images could continue to earn revenue for him so he could maintain a lifestyle that would also allow him to keep being creative. And that is so important. Shamira, where are we on time?
Well, technically.
It doesn't matter. This is our house and we can do whatever we want, right?
Exactly.
Lynn, just to kind of wrap it up, what advice, I'm laughing because I know what you're going to say or what I think you might say. What advice would you give a young photographer today or anybody? Let's expand it. Somebody starting out in the arts today, arts being including writing, acting, photography, you know, all the components that I look at that your career has encompassed.
I think it's really pretty simple. And that is, you know, one has to understand that there will always be ups and downs, and the ups come because you keep on doing it, you know, and you keep on trying to get better. And that is one of the paths to success. And that in the process, one has to realize that as much as their work speaks for them, they also speak for themselves, and that they really, you know, there are some people who their personalities actually get in the way of their success. I think that always seeing yourself as, particularly if you work in the commercial world or editorial world, always seeing yourself as a team member and, you know, is key to hopefully good work leading to more good work. Because if you're a pain in the neck to deal with, you're not going to last. People remember how they were treated. Assistants remember. You never know what position somebody will end up in one day. And I think that, you know, you just do the best you can, but you also do it from a point of view of trying to be the best person that you can. And I think that if you do that, success is a feeling, much less a quantitative goal. So my advice is to mind your own business. That's my advice, yeah.
I knew we had a good title for this show.
Could not have said it better. Lynn, I love the holistic view that you have. I'm taking notes while you're talking, and I just had to scribble down. The holistic view, it's you have your, for you, you have your mind on the bigger picture, and it's like all the different components come together and contribute to a whole. And it's amazing seeing how that has shaped your career, not just in photography, but everything else that you do. This has been fantastic.
Thank you. I'm sure you say that to all your people, but I appreciate it, and I appreciate your helping to get the word out there about the GoFundMe.
Definitely. We will make sure and include a link to that in the show notes. Are there any other links that you want people to know about where they can find you online?
Sure. There's rockandrollphotogallery.com, and then there's lynngoldsmith.com. Oh, and there's also willpowersinstitute.com. very important that you don't have willpower. It's willpowers. Because there, some people get that. Unfortunately, I've chosen names like Rock and Roll Photo Gallery. There's a Rock and Roll Gallery, and people forget to put in photo. It would be okay if I liked the way Rock and Roll Photo looked, but I don't. I don't like the way Willpower Institute looks. And anyway, it's Willpowers with an S.
I'll make sure and get that right in the show notes for
yes.
sure.
Yes, yeah.
Perfect. And Skip, where can folks find you online?
Everything I write every day is at skipcohenuniversity.com, and you'll find me at Skip Cohen on Twitter and Skip Cohen on Facebook. And my email is skip@mei500.com. And Shamira, where are they going to find you?
Folks can reach me at shamira@photofocus.com. Hit me up with any emails, of course, obviously, and questions and ideas and feedback for this podcast. We love hearing from our listeners, and it shapes how we move forward with this show. Lynn, we just want to thank you again. This has been just amazing. We really appreciate your time.
Seriously, thanks so much for being a part of this.
Thank you. I appreciate your having me.
And we want to thank our listeners for joining us. Please tell your friends about this podcast, especially if they have the burning desire to transform their photography business. We look forward to having you with us next time on the Mind Your Own Business podcast, brought to you by Photo Focus, Skip Cohen University, and Adobe Stock.